This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
. 2016 was a difficult year for freedom, human rights and democracy. The refugee crisis in Europe displayed some countries' true colours about how they, really felt about it. Hungary's xenophobic anti-migrant government campaign comes to mind. The Brexit effect divided the old and the young. Trump's win and unpopular rhetoric broke and are still breaking American communities and seem to be encouraging a lot of hate speech. I think for many of us, it seems as if the world has turned on its head and there is a sense of hopelessness. Can humanity prevail in the coming years, or will we turn on each other? Do we need a reset button, or is this the global crisis we need to get through to reach to a better place? We thought we'd check in with this particular individual to find out.
I'm Andrew Sandberg, senior researcher at the Future Humanity Institute at Oxford University, and my job is kind of to think big, long-term, about the prospects of humanity and the far future.
Wonderful. So, Anders, the news has been full of, things that are incredibly depressing of late. And what's more, recently we read that the famous doomsday clock has been brought forward 2.5 minutes to midnight, a setting closer to humanity's extinction than any year since 1953. What does that mean?
Well, first of all, the fact that the news are depressing doesn't necessarily tell us whether the state of the world is really dire. Because at any point in time, there is, of course, always some disaster and some problems going on. And even the mood in society or even globally changes quite strongly. The 1950s were, on one hand, very optimistic after the end of the Second World War. At the same time, paranoia crept in, and soon people were thinking about nuclear doomsday. And then you got the 60s, where actually the nuclear risk was bigger than ever before, but people started dreaming about the age of Aquarius. So it's important to recognize that our current political troubles, in many ways, are small ripples on the bigger stream of history.
That is an incredibly positive way of looking at it.
Yes. And I think it's useful to try to have a positive view of the world, because if we're just pessimistic and think nothing will go well ever, then we will not do anything to fix things.
But there really is no denying that 2016 was a particularly tough year, or at least a different year. I mean, the Brexit, Europe's refugee crisis, Donald Trump and his unpopular rhetoric. Should we be more worried than usual?
I think it's useful to be a bit concerned, yes, because 2016 told us something. Our old models of how politics work might be breaking up. The systems we have invented, not just the formal ones in terms of laws and constitutions, but even the agreements on what politics is like in different countries, is under stress and are changing. And that is really interesting, troublesome, and a good opportunity to fix things. Unfortunately, it can also go rather badly wrong. So 2016 was a wake-up call that, we need to rethink a lot of things. And we probably have to do that loudly, publicly. It's going to be a global debate about some of the issues. Locally, we need here in Britain to handle the fallout from Brexit and people's weird expectations. But I think 2016 is a useful marker that, here we have a transition. Just like 1968 was a transition in many countries where suddenly was a political awakening.
So, Anders, what does this mean for the work that you do at the Future of Humanity Institute? I mean, how has it kind of figured in your thinking?
So, even around our institute, people got rather depressed after the Trump election. We had a lunch where we discussed what does this do, for example, about the existential threats to humanity. And there was a general view that, yes, the world has become more dangerous. Because one of the main reasons for big power wars is misunderstandings and impulsive actions that are misinterpreted. And, that sounds almost like the first name of the current American president. So there is a fair bit of near-term risk that has increased. It's not enormous, but it's enough to be concerned. But perhaps more importantly, it also seems like, at least in some countries, a lot of long-term planning is on hold. But that just told us that, okay, we need to think at the Future Humanity Institute how that affects our plans. Maybe we should reallocate efforts a little bit from some very long-term risks to actually reducing nuclear war risk. Can we figure out what countries are actually long-term and help them create good diplomatic connections? And of course, from our perspective, in the really long run, most politicians and most corruption scandals are going to be forgotten within a decade or two. Quite a lot of the history of humanity is much bigger in patterns. They can be upset sometimes by an individual or a random event, but quite a lot of it is more about the big systems.
The reality, of course, is that we are actually living in the most peaceful time in history. We are living in an era where global death rates are going down, disease is going down, people are living longer, technology seems to be improving. So it's actually, on the whole, pretty good.
Yeah. On the whole, the world is actually getting better on average on an enormous scale. And this has been going on for a long time. If you plot the global wealth over the past 2,000 years, it has been growing at a very steady exponential increase of 2% per year for 2,000 years. And even the fall of the Roman Empire, the Black Plague, the Second World War, all these enormous disasters are merely wiggles on this big curve. We can be fairly certain that if nothing goes terribly wrong, the future is going to be far richer, far healthier, far wealthier, and far more knowledgeable. The problem is, of course, that we have some risks that we have created a civilization that might be destroyed by nuclear war or pandemics or some other threat to generate. And of course, there is always a possibility that we create conditions that might ruin many of the things we care most about. But these are problems we can recognize. We are species that actually sees its own mortality and its own future and realize, oh, we have a bit of control here. We can actually do a few things to improve it.
So what can we do?
So in the short term, it seems like, yes, improving governance is a super important priority. And as the debate about fake news has shown, we might also want to figure out better ways of doing our collective thinking. A society is, in some sense, a thinking machine, taking in information, distributing it, analyzing it, reacting to it. It's just that despite all our wonderful new media, we haven't created the institutions to filter out noise and errors. We still haven't figured out what to replace traditional authorities. And we probably need to do that in order to improve government. Because governance is the cause of wars and many other disasters. Governments are useful tools, but they're very powerful and dangerous tools, so we better take care of them and make sure they're nice. Also, on a technological scale, we want to figure out how to handle pathogens. We need better disease surveillance, but that requires quite a lot of international cooperation, as well as smart technology that can find the DNA of a new virus, alert the people that there is a new virus in town, and then we can start researching a cure. Some things that make the world much safer are very simple. The famous red phone between the Kremlin and the White House, which actually isn't red and isn't a phone, but is a way of quickly communicating. And that allows, if there is an accident with nuclear weapons, actually they can have at least 15 minutes of back and forth to discuss what to do. They have a chance to defuse the situation, which otherwise would have led directly to a disaster. So that simple communication line made the world significantly safer. We should be on the lookout for more things like that. There are probably a few governments around that actually need red phones of the right kind, but just to make sure that no crisis escalates.
So let's talk about red phones and the possibility of nuclear war. I think one of the biggest fears about having an inexperienced president in the White House, or someone who might be slightly more hot-headed, if you will, is that that individual has ease of access to nuclear launch codes. I mean, you've done a study on this before. How likely is a nuclear war to take place given the present circumstances? I mean, what is your probability reading like right now?
So there is no easy way of calculating the probability of any given president pressing the nuclear button. But we can make a very rough statistical analysis like this. There have been 70 years of nuclear weapon and no nuclear war. So if the probability of nuclear war is an unknown number between 0 and 1, we can actually use a probability theory to calculate a distribution of that that fits with this data. It can't be very high because then we would have seen a nuclear war. But it could perhaps be somewhat high. So when you do the math, it turns out that I get the probability about 0.1% per year. But this is the average across the entire Cold War. So if you happen to know that the president woke up very grumpy this morning and the Russians are making annoying phone calls, maybe you should expect that probability today is slightly higher. While if it's a sunny day in Washington and the Russians are nice, maybe it's slightly lower. But the important part here is 0.1% per year. That's actually a quite large risk. If somebody told you that an airline flight you were going to go on had that probability of crashing, you would probably think twice about going on board. So the probability calculated by this very crude method seems to be relatively high. And some others would say, no, it's much safer than that. We know what we're doing. But there have been independent analysis showing that the probability of nuclear war happening by accident is not super small. It's maybe one chance in 100,000 per year or thereabouts. So there is a disturbing probability of accidents leading to disasters, and deliberate conflict can, of course, also do that. Now, understanding, having somebody who's experienced, or even having sensible people in the administration that realize that, yeah, I got that command, I want to wait 5 minutes until he calms down before actually executing it, that can be tremendously useful. After all, we were all saved in 1983 by Stanislav Petrov, who didn't press the button, even though all the computers in the Soviet Union command center were telling him that the Americans were launching a nuclear attack. It turned out to be an error, and we should all be very grateful that Petrov indeed thought twice about pressing the button.
That was Anders Sandberg, Senior Research Fellow at the Future of Humanity Institute. More after this. Stay tuned to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
This is the Evening Edition with me, Uma Paganampakepagan. We're taking a look today about what the future holds for us given the current negative temperament the world over. We've completed a tough and bleak 2016, and now, 3 months into 2017, things still seem quite depressing. Anders Sandberg, a futurologist and senior research fellow at the Future of Humanity Institute, spoke to me earlier about whether all hope is lost for humankind. Now, he's been pretty positive so far, so I thought we'd get a different perspective instead, because we wouldn't be truly Asian if we didn't. Kenny Hu, chief researcher and consultant at Good Feng Shui, gives us his interpretation of the year that was 2016 and how we should move forward.
Okay, in fact, everything in cycles. And previously, actually, a lot of so-called disasters also happened in the previous years. However, due to the modern age, right, because we are having the very convenient social media and then everything, the news can be updated very fast, like over split of seconds, right? Something happened in, for example, in the US, immediately in the next second, next couple of minutes, we know already. So a lot of so-called the happenings, right, for example, in 2016, some of the events looked like a little bit more negative, being so-called circulated very fast, very efficiently to all over the world. And then we have been gathering a lot of all this information, and people tend to look at the negative things. So humankind is always having a kind of like a fallback plan, right? We tend to be more concerned about the negative things. So 2016, a lot of people may feel that a lot of negative things happened, but however 2016, it may be also some positive thing happened as well. A lot of people may think in the end of 2015, some people predicted 2016 will be challenging. That's right. That makes some group of people, they worked harder in 2016. So throughout after 2016, they found that actually 2016 was a so-called more harvesting year. Right. Of course, there would be some so-called negative events like the U.S. president is someone most people did not expect. And also the Britain exit from the Eurozone. Most people tend to be uncomfortable with the so-called drastic changes. When we come into 2017, and interesting enough, in Feng Shui also, we always think that everything is in cycle. Every 20 years there's a cycle. Right now we are living in the year of 2017, which is within the period number 8, Feng Shui cycle. Period 8 cycle started from year 2004 until year 2023. Typically we are now into the final part of the period number 8. We are entering slowly, gradually to the period number 9, which will start officially from 2024. However, before 2024, especially by 2017, we are already being so-called influenced by the period 9 cycle. That's why I specifically named this year as the year of new opportunity. Simply because we are now, actually, from this year 2017, gradually we are entering to a new world order. There will be a lot of so-called changes, those things that we have been very used to in terms of the system, in terms of the way that we are doing business, has been like very heavy journey. Somehow in this year and also last year, a lot of so-called drastic changes came in. And from our good feng shui viewpoint, this is actually a sign that leads us into a better era, actually. By having 2016, a lot of so-called negative events, 2017, a lot of so-called uncertainties that actually make a lot of people become like facing a lot of so-called hesitation in terms of their future planning. They do not know what to do. They just want to move forward or they need to become more conservative. That make a lot of people in a dilemma, in a lot of crossroads. So a lot of people may think that, are we entering to a more negative direction or a more positive direction? But to us, from the good feng shui viewpoint, we are entering a so-called a more positive so-called direction, especially in the period number 9, which is the fire element. Fire means celebration, wind means glorious. So gradually after these 2 years, for example, 2016, 2017, from 2018 onwards, gradually, you will see a lot more positive things coming in. That is what we are seeing. However, gradually, we are seeing now, right now, the world focus and also the center of the world slowly, gradually, are moving towards the China, moving back to Asia right now. So we are now, slowly, a lot of so-called the influencers, right, will be maybe from China, from the Eastern, from the Oriental country. So this is what we are seeing, and then the world keep on changing. Right now, we are seeing, for example, U.S. is having a lot of hassles, a lot of challenges, right? And then the, in terms of economy, also facing a lot of uncertainties. And China is keep on progressing very well right now. And we are seeing, one side, the Oriental countries, for example, led by China, is moving very fast. And U.S. maybe their step is a bit slower. So the gap is become bigger and bigger. And there's a lot of people right now also trying to, move to, for example, to do business with China or maybe bringing in a lot of investment or investors from China. Like, for example, right now, what Malaysia is doing, I think, should be correct. Especially China is having the One Belt, One Road initiative. Like, this is actually a wonderful so-called initiative that actually helping the neighboring countries to progress further. So by having all these positive factors, we tend to believe that in this year from 2017, if we are aware of the so-called opportunity emerging, we should be able to change ourselves to be better in terms of our, for example, our business, our lifestyle, in terms of even the education, a lot of things will be changing into a more positive way.
That was Kenny Hu, Chief Researcher and Consultant at Good Feng Shui, giving us a rather pragmatic outlook about what we can expect from 2017 and beyond. We're heading for the news, but after that, I pick up from where I left off earlier with futurologist Anders Sandberg. This is The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Hello, it's the Evening Edition with me, Umapaganampike Pagan. We're speaking today to a futurologist about whether the human race is cracking under current pressures. And by this, I mean the events that took place since 2016 until now. Brexit, Trump, the refugee crisis. There's a stench in the air and it spells more negativity than positivity. Anders Sandberg, Senior Research Fellow at the University of Oxford's Future of Humanity Institute, helps put my pessimism into perspective, making me look beyond the doom and gloom for that silver lining. Here, he continues our conversation about the future of humankind. So, Anders, what then is the value of predictions and probability? As a member of the general public, how should we see this information that the doomsday clock has been brought forward to 2.5 minutes from midnight?
So the doomsday clock is not so much a measurement of the state of the world as an argument and as trying to point out something important to other people. So the fact that they moved it forward was an indication that, yes, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, their researchers are very, very concerned about the state of the world. They have this little problem, of course, that if things get worse, they still just can't move, they can't move it to 12 straight away or something. So they're kind of bounded by moving it 30 seconds. But it's still a very strong signal. They are worried not just about the nuclear threat, but also that the U.S. right now seems to be not doing very much about climate change, while the rest of the world is realizing that climate change is going to be a very, very big and problematic issue. So what you can do is, of course, create the discussion and actually try to get the right people to talk to each other. I've been involved in a project between Oxford and the Finnish foreign government where we're thinking, what can diplomats do to reduce existential risk? And we came up with various proposals. And, some of them we're hoping to implement. Many of them are rather small things, like having better governance of trying to modify the climate. Others involve having the right people think about not just natural pandemics, but pandemics designed by some evildoers who want to cause damage.
Biological weapons and the like.
Yes. Given that biotechnology is getting better and better and cheaper and easier to do even in your home, sooner or later somebody's going to use it for something bad. And it's useful to be ready for it. So many of these threats, even if you can't change the probability, you can make yourself more resilient. So in America, there are various preppers who worry about the imminent nuclear war or the end of civilization, who store food and hide in bunkers out in the countryside. That might be rather extreme. But we should think about how do we make our societies more resilient? How do we distribute an electricity production so if a central power plant blows up or is damaged, that nothing happens? How do we distribute information so if communications goes down, we can actually still communicate and know useful things? And some of it is very simple, like knowing your neighbors. And in disasters, more people are saved medically by their neighbors than by any doctors, simply because people help each other. It's very important. And having a good civil society where people actually know each other and can help each other if there is trouble actually saves you against quite a lot of disasters. We can't predict all things that can go wrong, but we can predict some things that are good.
But that's the key, right, Anders? I mean, that's the key to everything. Having a good civil society, having your neighbors look out for you, because at the end of the day, that's the only thing that's really going to keep us safe and secure.
Exactly. So a very important concept is trust. How much do you trust your neighbors? How much do you trust the people you trade with or your government? Or the other institutions you depend on. Societies that have a high degree of trust can save a lot of energy because you don't need to spend all the time checking that your neighbors are not stealing from you. You don't need to spend a lot of time checking whether the person selling you something is cheating. So they become more effective. But if trust disappears, then of course things become less effective, economic growth stagnates, and also people feel much worse. So building good systems for trust, whether that is smiling at your neighbors or having some clever software and ensuring that people's reputations are true, that can be super helpful in actually making us safer.
Well, Anders, so far your take on the situation and the state of the world has made me feel a lot better. I mean, there is a rationality and positivity to what you're saying, and I'm thankful for that. However, I still worry about one thing, which is this perception, this public perception that everything is going to pot, that the world is in a terrible place. I worry that that will inspire humanity towards a downward spiral.
There is a risk of that, yes. Because if you think that the future is dark, then there is no point in saving resources. You should be using them now, partying and enjoying. If you think resources are going to become scarce, people will hoard resources, or regard the world as a zero-sum game, that what I win, you lose. And that is, of course, terrible for actually fixing the problems we need. In order to fix diseases, we need to have good hospitals, we need international cooperation, we need to have a healthcare system that plans years ahead. And if you think that you can't plan ahead, in that case, things will not work very well. So there is a psychological danger. Now, people have been very pessimistic about the future before, but this time we also are connected using the internet, which is both a great boon and a great threat, because our negativity can feed on itself. We can spread the pessimism globally. Conversely, of course, optimism and good solutions can also spread globally. So I think we're partially individually responsible to actually have hope for the future and try to see what can I do to fix it. And that might be a very small thing, like keeping good relations with neighbors, or a big thing, like trying to negotiate a climate treaty or inventing a technology that makes things safer. But I think the threat of a dark future, that's something we should just use to inspiration. Okay, I don't want to end up there. I want to end up in utopia, not dystopia. And I think we can do that. We have done so in the past.
Now, things are dark, and even if they're not as dark as they should be, we now live in a world where we're so interconnected that we get depressed over here about something bad that's happening in America because we're just inundated with that news all the time. And even though it may not have a direct effect, it has this indirect psychological effect as well, thanks to Facebook and Twitter and the internet and 24/7 cable news and all of that.
Yeah. So one of the upsides of having a global world is, of course, that you get the benefit of all the knowledge, all the ideas, and all the economy worldwide. The downside is, of course, yeah, we also get all the troubles. We get to hear about problems halfway around the world. And indeed, these troubles might actually affect us. Not just because many of our friends and family might be traveling globally, but because our economies are interlinked and our politics is interlinked. And indeed, some problems like a financial collapse can spread using these global networks. So the irony is that things that make us better off, because the globalization is giving us wealth and knowledge, can also make us more fragile. But part of that might be that we're relatively young species when it comes to handling a globalized world. We still need to invent ways of actually organizing this in a better way. But there is something very cheering on the thought that now a tragedy halfway around the world actually moves us. Once upon a time, we would never even know about it. Now we have a chance to actually recognize that, oh, there are people there too, and they also matter.
That was Anders Sandberg, Senior Research Fellow at the University of Oxford's Future of Humanity Institute. Did his opinion change your mind even a little about the human race? Did it convince you that certain current events won't necessarily make us spiral into hopeless cases? Let us know by tweeting us at BFM Radio. Speaking to him at least filled me with a little more optimism than when I started. If you think someone out there needs a pick-me-up based on the current state of the world, send them this podcast. Direct them to our BFM app, which you can download off Google Play or the Apple App Store. Search for the podcast Down the Rabbit Hole. I'm Umar Paganampike Pagan for the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.